crack, followed by a grinding sound and then the thump of something heavy hitting the floor. A wet stickiness splashed the side of her face, and with it, a rotten smell, as if a door had blown open onto a room of corpses. Oh, for the love of God! The viral was still on its knees, its headless torso folded forward to the floor. Dark rhythmic spurts were convulsing from its severed neck, forming a glossy pool on the floor. Fanning was staring at the front of his pants with revulsion. His suit, Amy realized, was rotten and threadbare. It hung on his body with the unstructured looseness of rags. "Look at this," he moaned. "This is never going to come out. They're like pets, the mess they make. And the stink, just god-awful." It was absurd, all of it. What had she expected? Not this. Not this whirlwind of instantly changeable moods and thoughts. This man before her. There was something almost pathetic about him. "Well now," he said, and smiled nonsensically. "Let's get you to your feet, shall we?" She was hauled upright. Fanning stepped forward. From his pocket he produced a handkerchief, flapped it open with a flourish, and dabbed the blood from her face. His eyes seemed both close and far away, peculiarly magnified, as if she were observing them through a telescope. On his cheeks and chin was a dusting of whitish beard. His teeth were gray, dead-looking. He hummed tunelessly as he went about this chore, then took a step back, lips pursed, brow furrowed, examining his handiwork with a slow nod. "Much better." He regarded her at uncomfortable length, then declared, "I have to say, there's something very appealing about you. A certain innocence. Though I'm guessing there's more there than meets the eye." "Where's Peter?" His eyes widened. "She speaks. I was beginning to wonder." Then, dismissively, "Not to worry about your friend. Delayed in traffic, I expect. As for me, I'm glad the two of us can have this chance to talk amongst ourselves. I hope this doesn't seem too forward, but I feel a certain kinship with you, Amy. Our journeys are not so very different when you think about it. But first, where, pray tell, is my friend Alicia? This specimen of overgrown table cutlery tells me she's around here someplace." Amy didn't answer. "Nothing to share on the subject. Have it your way." "Do you know what you are, Amy? I've given it a lot of thought." "Let him talk," she told herself. Time was what she needed. Let him use the minutes. "You're an apology." Fanning said nothing further. The virals held her fast. He stepped away toward the train tunnels, where he resumed his original position, gazing forlornly into the blackness. "For a long time I wanted to kill you. Well, perhaps not wanted. You can't help being what you are any more than I can. It wasn't anything personal. You were merely a symbol, a stand-in for the thing I hated most." He turned the sword in his hand, studying the blade. "Imagine it, Amy. Imagine the folly of the man. He actually believed he could make everything all right, that he could atone for his crimes. But he couldn't. Not after what he did to Liz. To me. To you." He looked up. "She was nothing to me, the other one. Just some woman in a bar, looking for a night of fun. a bit of company in her lonely little life. I regret that intensely. Amy waited. I thought I could forget about it. But that was the night. I see that now. It was the night the truth of the world opened to me. It wasn't the woman that did it. No. It was the child. The little girl in the crib. Do you know that I can still smell her, Amy? That sweet, soft odor that all babies have. It's practically holy. Her little fingers and toes, the smoothness of her skin. Her whole life was in her eyes. All of us begin that way. You, me, everyone. Full of love. Full of hope. I could see it. She trusted me. Her mother lay dead on the kitchen floor, but here was this man, come to answer her cries. Would I give her a bottle, change her diaper? Perhaps I would pick her up, take her on my lap, and read her a story. She had no idea what I'd done, what I was. I felt so sorry for her. But that wasn't the reason. I felt sorry because she'd had to be born in the first place. I should have killed her right then. It would have been a mercy. A silence caught and held. Then, I see from your expression that I appall you. Believe me, I appall myself sometimes. But the truth is the truth. There's no one watching over us. That's the cold heart of it, the grand delusion. Or if there is, he's the cruelest kind of bastard, letting us believe he cares. I'm nothing compared to him. What kind of God would allow her mother to die like that? What God would let Liz be all alone at the end. Not the touch of a hand or a single word of kindness to help her leave her life. I'll tell you what kind, Amy. The same one who made me. He turned toward her again. Your friends on the boat will be back, you know. Don't be surprised. I know all about it. I practically watched them sail away from the pier. Oh, maybe not soon. But eventually, their curiosity will get the better of them. It's simple human nature. All of this will be dust by then. But here I'll be, waiting. Do it, Alicia. She thought. Do it, Michael. Do it now. What do I want, Amy? The answer is quite simple. I want to save you. More than that, I want to teach you. To make you see the truth. His expression darkened. Hold her tightly, please. The clock had run down. Michael glanced at Alicia. Ready? She nodded. You might want to cover your ears. He shoved down the plunger. What the hell, Circuit? He drew up the bar and tried again. Nothing. He pulled the positive wire, touched it lightly to the contact, and pressed the plunger a third time. A spark leapt. He had current. The problem was at the other end. Stay here. He unscrewed the second wire, grabbed the plunger box and lantern, and tore down the stairs. The strength of the viral's grip increased with a hot jab. The pain was eye-watering. Bits of confettied light danced in her vision.
Bring him in, please.
Peter. Two virals dragged him from the direction of the tunnels. His body hung floppily, face down, the tips of his boots skimming the floor.
It's the only way, Amy. I wish there were another, but there simply isn't.
Amy could barely think. The slightest movement ignited shrieks of agony. It felt as if the bones of her upper arms were about to shatter under the pressure of the viral's hands, to crumble into dust.
Ah, here we are.
The virals halted, still holding Peter by the shoulders. Blood was dripping from his hair, flowing down the creases of his face. Fanning stepped toward him, sword extended. Amy's breath stopped in her throat. He positioned the flat of the blade beneath Peter's chin and, with cruel slowness, tilted his face upward.
You care about this man, do you not?
Peter found Amy with his eyes, but seemed unable to focus. His mouth was moving soundlessly, with what might have been a sigh or groan.
Answer the question.
Yes, she said.
So much that you would do anything to save him, in fact.
Her vision swam. To be undone so easily, that was the cruelest thing.
Say it, Amy. Let me hear the words.
Her answer came out with a choking sound. Yes, I'd do anything to save him. Her head rolled forward in defeat. She had nothing left.
Please, just let him go.
One flick of the wrist and his throat would open like paper. Peter's eyes were closed, preparing for death. That, or he had slipped back into a merciful unconsciousness.
Let me show you something, Fanning said. It's a little talent I've discovered. Jonas would get a real kick out of this.
He did something strange. He began to undress. First, the suit coat, which he folded in half and lay neatly on the floor with the sword, then his shirt, unbuttoning it to reveal a fan of downy white chest hair and a smooth, leanly muscled trunk.
I have to say, it's good to finally get out of these clothes.
He had knelt to untie his shoes.
To put aside these trappings.
Shoes, socks, pants. The air around him had begun to change. It fluttered like waves of heat above a desert road. He rocked his head toward the ceiling. A sheen of oily sweat appeared on his skin. He licked his lips with a slow tongue and began to roll his shoulders and neck, his eyes half-lidded, lost in sensation.
God, that's good, he said.
With a bony pop, Fanning arced his back and moaned with pleasure. His hair was ejecting in clumps. Fat, throbbing veins pulsed beneath the skin of his face and chest, tatting a bluish web. He rocked his jaw, showing his fangs. His fingers, from which long yellowish nails now protruded, flexed restlessly.
Isn't it wonderful?
Michael hit the tunnel, Alicia shouting his name behind him. Rats were suddenly everywhere, an undulating wave of them flowing toward the bulkhead. The screw had torn loose. The pack lay in the water. The fuses were soaked and useless.
Fuck!
His eyes fell on a small electrical panel, at eye level, just to the right of the bulkhead. The ground was boiling with rats. They were swarming around his ankles, brushing against his legs with their soft, nauseating weight. With the tip of a screwdriver, he popped the door and waved the lantern over the interior.
Get back!
Alicia was standing a few yards behind him. 30 feet away, a viral was crouched on the floor of the tunnel. A second clung to the ceiling, its inverted head rocking side to side. The long, bald tail of a rat was whipping from its mouth.
Go on, beat it.
The virals merely looked at her.
Get out of here.
The inside of the panel was a tangled mess of wires connected to a breaker board.
Give me an hour, Michael thought, and I can do something with this, no problem.
These guys look hungry, Circuit. Tell me you've figured this out.
God, how he hated that name.
He was pulling wires free, attempting to separate them into some kind of coherence, to trace them back to their source.
More coming!
He glanced over his shoulder. The walls of the tunnel had begun to glow green. There was a skittering sound, like dry leaves rolling on pavement.
I thought these guys were your friends!
Alicia fired at the viral on the ceiling. Her aim was unsteady. Sparks flew up. The viral skittered backward, dropped, and came up on all fours.
I don't think it's me they're interested in.
He sliced off a length of cable, stripped the ends, and screwed them to the plunger. Holding the wire, he gave a final look into the panel. He would have to take a wild guess.
This one?
No, that. A barrage of fire behind him.
I'm not kidding, Michael. We've got about 10 seconds.
With four quick turns, he spliced the ends of the wires together. Alicia was backing toward him, firing in short bursts. The sound reverberated off the walls of the tunnel, hammering his eardrums.
Good God, he was tired of this sort of thing. Tired of guesswork and laboring in the dark. Tired of leaking valves and bad circuits and busted relays. Tired of things not working. Things that refused to bend to his will.
Need some help here,
Alicia yelled. Her rifle drained. Alicia tossed it aside and drew a pair of blades from her belt, one for each fist. Michael grabbed her around the waist and pulled her into him. The tunnel was a squirming mass. They fell backward as the first viral careened forward. Michael drew his sidearm and fired two shots, the first sparking off its shoulder, the second catching it in the left eye. A splash of blood, and with a shriek it skidded to the floor. They were scooting backward toward the bulkhead, Michael firing his pistol, shoving his heels against the concrete, one arm encircling Alicia's waist to drag her with him through the fetid water. He had 15 rounds in the gun, another 2 magazines stashed in a pocket, useless and out of reach. The slide locked back.
Oh shit, Michael.
So, the end of the line. How slow its approach. How sudden its arrival. We never truly believe it's coming, he thought. And then before we know it, it's here. All the things we've done in our lives, and the undone things as well, extinguished in an instant. He dropped the gun and pulled Alicia tight against him. His hand was on the plunger.
Close your eyes, he said.
The change was complete. Fanning's face was still tipped upward, lips parted, eyes shut. A sigh of satisfaction heaved from deep in his chest. The being before her was not one Amy had ever seen or imagined. Still recognizable as himself, but neither wholly man nor wholly viral. An amalgam, half one and half the other, as if a new version of the species had been born into the world. There was something of the rodent about him, the nose snout-like and full-nostriled, the ears triangulated at the top and swept back from the curve of his skull. His hair was gone, replaced by pinkish natal fuzz. His teeth were the same, though the mouth itself had enlarged into a kind of wind-blown grin, giving a full view of his fangs, which dripped from the corners. His limbs possessed a thin-boned delicacy. The index fingers of both hands had elongated to curve-tipped points. Amy thought of a giant, wingless bat. He stepped toward her, his eyes locked on hers. She dared not look away, no matter how much she wanted to. Fear had paralyzed her limbs. They felt far away and useless, loose as liquid. As Fanning neared, his right hand rose. The digits were webbed with a translucent membrane. The daggered index finger, jointed in the middle, unfurled toward her face. Her eyes clamped shut instinctively. A prick of pressure on her cheek, not quite hard enough to break the skin. Every molecule in her body shuddered. With lascivious slowness, the nail traced downward, following the curve of her face, as if he were tasting her flesh through his finger.
How good it is to let the truth come out.
His voice, too, had altered, possessing a high, hidden note with a squeaking sound. The air around him smelled of animals, the small, burrowing things of the world.
Open your eyes, Amy.
Fanning was standing beside Peter. The virals had hauled him upright.
This man, he is your curse, as Liz was mine. It's love that enslaves us, Amy. It is the play within the play, the stage on which the tragic drama of our human lives unfolds. That is the lesson I have to teach you.
And with these words, Fanning opened his jaws wide, tipped Peter's face upward on the end of one long webbed digit, tenderly, like a mother with her child, and clamped his jaws around Peter's neck. The squeak of current from the plunger was not enough to open the bulkhead all the way, but it was enough to get things started. As the door's counterweights jolted downward, creating a gap between the door and the floor of the tunnel, Michael and Alicia were blasted by a jet of water. In less than a second, the tunnel became a roaring river. Michael attempted to rise, but the force was too great. He could find no traction, and then they were tumbling, hurtled downstream in the roiling water. They plunged into the station, going like a shot. There was no real light, only a vague glow from the stairway, glimpsed fleetingly as they passed. Water filled his nose and mouth, foul-tasting. He imagined this to be the taste of rats, and threatening to choke him. They were riding just beneath the platform. Gripping Alicia by the wrist, Michael reached out with his free hand and made a desperate lunge for the edge. His fingers touched, but tore away. They passed through the station. The water was rising fast. Soon it would be over their heads. The next station would come at 14th Street. Much too far. Ahead, a faint glow appeared. As they neared, the light congealed into a discreet shaft, an opening in the roof of the tunnel. "There's a ladder!" Alicia cried. Her head went under again. "What?" Her face re-emerged. She was fighting for breath. She pointed. "A ladder on the wall!" They were sailing straight for it. Alicia grabbed hold first. Michael spun around her body, then using his left hand, reached out, seized a rung, and hooked an elbow through it. At the top of the ladder was a metal grate, daylight beyond it. "Can you make it?" Michael said. They were being pummeled by the current. Liz shook her head. "Try, damn it!" Her strength was gone. She had nothing left. "I can't." He would have to pull her up. Michael reached above her head and drew himself free of the water. The grate presented a different problem. Unless he could find a way to open it, they were going to drown anyway. At the top of the ladder, he raised one hand and pushed. Nothing. Not the slightest tremor. He reared back and shoved the heel of his palm into the slatted metal. He punched the grate again and again. On the fourth blow, it burst open. He shoved it aside, climbed out, and pressed his body to the pavement. The rising water had lifted Alicia halfway up the ladder. The light seemed to make a kind of halo around her face. He reached down. "Take my hand!" But that was all he said, his words cut short as a wall of water slammed into her, into both of them, bursting like a geyser through the open grate and blowing Michael halfway across the street. The collapse of the bulkhead just south of the Astroplace station, one of 8 retention dams protecting the subway lines of Manhattan from the greedy Atlantic, was the first in a series of events that no person, Michael included, could have anticipated. Freed from incarceration, the water shot through the tunnel with the hammering power of 100 locomotives. It ripped and tore. It blasted to bits, It detonated and crushed and destroyed, plowing through the structural underpinnings of Lower Manhattan like a scythe through wheat. 8 blocks north of Astor Place at 14th Street, the water jumped the tracks, while the main body churned straight north beneath Lexington Avenue, toward Grand Central. The rest veered west on the Broadway line, roaring toward the bulkhead at Times Square, which would subsequently fail as well, flooding everything beneath the pavement south of 42nd Street between Broadway and 8th Avenue, and opening the whole west side to the sea. And it was only just getting started. In its thundering wake, the water left a trail of destruction. Manhole covers blew sky high. Sewers exploded. Streets buckled and collapsed. Beneath the ground, a chain reaction had commenced. Like the ocean of which it was a part, the raging water sought only the expansion of its domain. The prize was the island itself, which after a century of sodden neglect, was rotten to the core. On a corner of 10th Street and 4th Avenue, Michael returned to consciousness with the unsettled sense that the world's relationship to gravity had altered. It was as if every object were moving away from every other in a state of general repulsion. He blinked his eyes and waited for this feeling to stop. But it did not. A great font of water was jetting from the grate, high into the air, dissolving at the top into a sparkling mist that cast a rainbow above the flooded street. In his mentally fogged state, Michael stared at it in astonishment, not yet connecting the sight to anything else, while also noting, rather blandly, that other things were occurring. Loud things, concussive things, things that warranted further consideration if only he could marshal his thoughts. The street seemed to be sinking. Either that or everything else was getting taller, and bits of material were sailing off the faces of the buildings. Wait a second. The structure he was looking at, a nondescript mid-rise office building of dark tinted glass, was doing something peculiar. It appeared to be breathing. A deep respiratory flexing, like a baby's first breaths of life. It was as if this anonymous structure, one of thousands like it on the island, had awakened after decades of abandoned slumber. Spidering cracks materialized in its reflective face. Michael sat upright, balancing on his palms. The pavement had begun to undulate disturbingly beneath him. The glass exploded. Michael rolled and flattened himself to the ground, covering his head as a million shards rained down. Whole plates detonated on the pavement. He was yelling at the top of his lungs, nonsensical words, vile curses, an aural vomitus of terror. He was about to be diced to ribbons. There wouldn't be enough of him left to bury, not that there would be anybody around to do that. The seconds passed, glass cascading all around him, Michael waiting, for the second time that day, to die. He didn't. He lifted his face from the pavement. The sun was gone, the air grown dim. Tiny, twinkling shards covered his body, clinging to his arms and hands and hair and the fabric of his clothing. A gritty wind swirled the air. The sky, it seemed, had begun to issue snow. No, not snow. Paper. A single page dropped lazily into his hands. Memo, it read at the top, and beneath that, from HR Department, to all employees, benefits enrollment period. Michael was momentarily transfixed by the strangeness of these words. They felt like a code. Within their mysterious phrasing lay an entire reality, a world lost in time. Suddenly the paper was gone. A gust of air had stripped it from his hand. The street was darkening. A roaring sound came from his left. Second by second it increased, as did the wind. He turned his head to look uptown, toward the source of the noise. A great gray monster was roaring toward him. He scrambled to his feet. His head was swimming. His legs felt like wet sand. He ran, nonetheless, like hell. The first building to fall was not the one Michael saw. By this time, the collapse of Midtown Manhattan was several minutes old. From the south edge of Central Park to Washington Square, edifices large and small were in the process of acute structural liquefaction, melting and toppling into the gobbling sinkhole that the island's central core was on its way to becoming. Some fell independently, crumpling vertically into their foundations like prisoners felled by a firing squad. Others were encouraged by their neighbors, as building after building teetered and toppled into others. A few, such as the great glass tower on the east side of the trapezoidal city block at 55th and Broadway, appeared to succumb entirely through the power of suggestion. My fellows are giving up the ghost. Why don't I do that also? The process might have been likened to a swiftly moving metastasis. It leapt across the boulevards as if from organ to organ. It churned through the avenues of blood. It wrapped its lethal fingers around the bones of steel. Dust clouds roared in a great carcinogenic regurgitation, blackening the skies. An ersatz night fell over Manhattan. Beneath Grand Central Station, the water arrived from two directions. First, via the Lexington Avenue subway line from Astor Place, then a few seconds later, through the 42nd Street shuttle line from Times Square. The currents converged. Like a tsunami compressing as it approached the shore, the water's power magnified a thousandfold as it tore up the stairs.
"You ungrateful bitch!" Fanning cried. "What have you done?"
He said no more. The water arrived, a pounding wall blasting them off their feet. In a blink, the main hall was subsumed. Amy went under. She was rolling, tossing, her sense of direction obliterated. The water was 6 feet deep and rising. Glass was shattering. Things were falling. Everything was in a tumult. She broke the surface in time to see the hall's high windows burst inward. The current grabbed her, sending her under again. She flailed helplessly, searching for something to grasp. The body of a viral careened into her. It was the female with the hair. Through the roaring murk, Amy glimpsed her eyes, full of terrified incomprehension. She sank and was gone. Amy was being swept toward the balcony stairs. She impacted hard. More bells, more pain. But she managed to grab hold of the rail with her right hand. Her lungs cried out for air. Bubbles rose from her mouth. The urge to breathe could not be forestalled much longer. The only thing to do was let the current take her, in the hope that she would be carried to safety. She let go of the rail. She smashed into the stairs again, but at least she was moving in the right direction. If she'd been carried into the tunnels, she would have drowned. A second shockwave hit her, squirting her upward. She landed on the balcony, clear of the water at last. On her hands and knees, she coughed and retched, foul-tasting water spewing from her mouth. Peter. Hurled up the stairs by the same current, he was lying just a few feet behind her. Where was Fanning? Had he been pulled under like the other virals, carried to the bottom by his weight? As she thought this, the floor lurched, the air cracked. She looked up to see a large chunk of the ceiling detach and tumble to the water. The building was coming down. Peter's chest was moving rapidly. The change had yet to begin. She shook him by the shoulders, called his name. His eyes fluttered open, then squinted at her face. She saw no recognition in them, only vague puzzlement, as if he could not quite place her. "I'm going to get you out of here." She drew him up by his arms and folded his body over her right shoulder. Her balance wavered, but she managed to hold on. The floor was sliding and undulating like the deck of a boat. Hunks of ceiling continued to break away, as the building's structural underpinnings failed. She looked around. To her right, a door. Run, she thought. Run, and keep on running. Then they were outside, though it hardly seemed so. The sky was dark as night, the sun eclipsed by dust, the great city unrecognizable. A vast immolation, everything rushing to ruin. The noise hammered her ears, roaring from all directions. She was on the elevated roadway on the west side of the station. It was tipped at a precarious angle. Cracks were spreading, whole sections collapsing. Amy picked a direction. Under Peter's weight, the best she could manage was a jog. Instinct was her only guide. To run. To survive. To carry Peter away. The road sloped down to street level. She could go no farther. Her legs were giving way. At the base of the ramp, she eased Peter to the ground. He was trembling, shaking with small, sharp spasms, like the chills of a fever, but growing stronger, more defined. Amy knew what he would want. He would want to die while still a man. The mortal instruments lay everywhere among the wreckage. Segments of rebar, sharp as knives, hunks of twisted metal, shards of glass. Suddenly, she knew. This was what Fanning had intended all along, that she should be the one. It's love that enslaves us, Amy. She was beaten. It was all for nothing in the end. She would be alone again. As she knelt beside him, a great sob shook her, the pain of her too long life, forestalled for a century, unleashed. The glimpse of life she'd been given. How fleeting it was. Better, perhaps, never to have had it. Peter had begun to moan. The virus churned inside him. It bore him away. She made her choice. A 3-foot length of steel with a triangulated tip. What function had it served? Part of a signpost? The frame of a window that had once gazed out upon the busy world? The underpinnings of a mighty tower soaring to the sky? She knelt again by Peter's body. The man inside was leaving. She bent and touched his cheek. His skin was damp and feverish. The blinking had commenced. Blink, blink, blink. A voice from behind. God damn you! She went hurling through the air. Michael sprinted down Fourth Avenue, the debris cloud roaring behind him. There would be no outrunning it. He turned right onto 8th Street. At the ends of the block, both in front and behind, the cloud roared past with a tornadic whoosh. Then, as if suddenly recalling his presence, "Oh, Michael, sorry I forgot you," turned the corners, barreling toward him from two directions. He dove through the nearest door and slammed it behind him. Some kind of clothing shop, coats and dresses and shirts hanging disembodied on the racks. A wide window with mannequins propped upon an elevated platform faced the street. The cloud arrived. The window burst inward. Michael's hands shot up to protect his eyes. Dust engulfed the room, blasting him backward. Pricks of pain announced themselves all over his body, his arms and hands, the base of his throat, the parts of his face that had been exposed, as if he'd been attacked by a swarm of bees. He tried to rise. Only then did he discover the long shard of glass embedded in his right thigh. It seemed strange that it didn't hurt more. It should have hurt like hell. But then the pain arrived, annihilating his thoughts. He was coughing, choking, drowning in the dust. He scrambled back from the window and crashed into a clothing rack. He yanked a shirt from its hanger. It was made of some kind of gauzy material. He watered it in his fist and pressed it to his mouth and nose. Breath by hungry breath, oxygen flowed back into his lungs. He tied the shirt around the lower half of his face. With stinging eyes, he looked out upon the dark street. He was inside the cloud. Everything was silent except for a faint pattering, the sound of airborne particles falling upon the pavement and the roofs of abandoned cars. His hands and arms were slick with blood. His leg, where the long piece of glass was buried, screamed with the slightest motion. He drew his blade and cut, then tore the leg of his trousers away. The glass, a long, narrow splinter, irregularly edged and slightly curved, had entered at an angle. The wound was roughly halfway between his groin and his knee on the inside flank of his leg. "Good Christ," he thought. "Another few inches higher and that thing would have sliced my nuts off." He reached over his head to yank another shirt from the rack and used it to wrap the exposed end of the shard. He supposed it was possible that removing the glass would open the wound wider, but the pain was unendurable. Unless he removed it, he wouldn't be going anywhere. To do it quickly. That was the best way. He took the wrapped shard in his fist. He counted to three. He pulled. All up and down the block, man-sized figures moving in the dust halted in their tracks and swiveled their faces toward the sound of Michael's scream.
"This was a temple."
Fanning's hand caught her across the cheek. The blow sent her careening backward.
"You do this to me? To my city?"
She raised her hands to protect her face. Instead, Fanning yanked her by the collar, hauled her up until her feet left the pavement, and tossed her away.
"I am going to take my time with you. You're going to want me to kill you. You are going to beg."
He came at her again and again. Tosses, slaps, kicks. She discovered herself lying face down. She felt detached from everything. Her thoughts possessed a lazy, unmoored quality. They seemed on the verge of some permanent and final severing, as if with the next blow they would sail up and away from her body, swallowed into the sky like a balloon cut from its string. Yet, to yield, to accept death. The mind forbade it. The mind demanded, against all sense, to go on. Fanning was somewhere behind her. Amy's awareness of him was less as a physical presence than an abstract force, like gravity, a well of darkness into which she was being relentlessly sucked. She began to crawl. Why wouldn't Fanning just kill her? But he'd said so himself. He wanted her to feel it, to feel life leaking out of her, drip by drip.
"Look at me."
A crack to her midriff lifted her off the ground. Fanning had kicked her. The wind sailed from her chest.
"I said, look at me."
He kicked her again, burying his foot below her sternum and flipping her onto her back. He was holding the sword over his head.
"We were supposed to meet at the kiosk."
"We?"
"You said you would be there. You said we would be together."
What was he seeing? Who was she to him? The transformation. It had done something to his mind.
"I never should have loved you."
She rolled away as the sword came down. It struck the pavement with a single noted clang. Fanning howled like a wounded animal.
"I wanted to die with you."
She was on her back again. Fanning had raised the sword above his head, ready to swing. She raised her arms in forbearance. One chance was all she had.
"Tim, don't."
Fanning froze.
"I wanted to be there, to be with you. That was all I ever wanted."
His arms tensed. At any second, the blade would fall.
"I waited all night. How could you do that to me? Why didn't you come? Why?"
"Because I died, Tim." For a moment, nothing happened.
"Please," she thought. "You died." "Yes. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to."
His voice was numb.
"On the train."
Amy spoke cautiously, keeping her voice even.
Yes. I was coming to see you. They carried me off. I couldn't stop them.
Fanning's eyes floated away from her face. He glanced around uncertainly.
But I'm here now, Tim. That's what matters. I'm sorry it took me so long.
How long could she sustain the lie? The sword was everything. If she could convince Fanning to give it to her.
We can still do it, she said. There's a way we can always be together. Just like we planned.
He looked back at her.
Come with me, Tim. There's a place we can go. I've seen it.
Fanning said nothing. She sensed her words gaining traction in his mind.
Where?
He asked.
It's the place where we can start over. We can do it right this time. All you have to do is give me the sword.
She extended her hand.
Come with me, Tim.
Fanning's eyes were locked on hers. Everything was inside them. The whole history of the man he'd been. The pain. The loneliness. The interminable hours of his life. Then...
You...
She was losing him.
Give me the sword, Tim. That's all you have to do. You're not her.
She felt it all collapsing.
Tim, it's me. It's Liz. You're Amy.
50 yards away, lying face up on the ground, the man known as Peter Jackson had begun to disappear. His mind straddled two worlds. In the first, one of darkness and commotion, Fanning was hurling Amy through the air. Peter sensed this rather dimly. He could not recall why it should be so. Nor could he intervene, his powers to act, even to move at all, having abandoned him. In the other was a window. A shade drawn over it glowed with summer light. The image felt familiar, like deja vu.
The window, Peter thought. It means I must be dying.
As he fought to focus his eyes, to bring himself back to reality, the light began to change. It was becoming something else. Not a window in his mind, but something physical. Through the dust-filled darkness was an opening, like a corridor ascending to a higher world, and through this tunnel a shining shape appeared. It teased at his memory. He knew what it was. If only he could summon the image forth. The picture sharpened. It resembled a crown, multi-layered, each layer arched as it narrowed to a spiked peak. Sunlight flared upon its mirrored face, shooting a bright beam down the corridor, which was a hole in the clouds, into his eyes. The Chrysler Building. The corridor collapsed. Darkness folded over him again. But now he knew. The night in which he dwelled was false. The sun was still up there. Above the cloud of dust it shone bright as day. If he could get to the sun, if he could somehow lead Fanning into its light. But this thought was lost as a great force gripped him, like a vortex. Its power was colossal. He felt himself being pulled down and down and down. What lay at the bottom he did not know, only that when he reached it, he would be forever lost. Somewhere distant, his body was changing. Racked with convulsions, it hammered on the pavement of the broken city. Bones elongated, teeth showered from his gums. He was sinking into a sea of everlasting darkness in which no trace of himself would remain.
No. Not yet.
He searched for something, anything to hold on to. In his mind's eye, Amy's face appeared. The picture was not imagined, but taken from life. They were sitting on his bed. Their faces were close, their hands entwined. Teardrops hung upon her eyelashes like beads of light.
"You get to keep one thing," she told him. "What I wanted to keep was you."
"Was you," thought Peter.
"You."
He fell. The pain in Michael's leg exploded. Removing the glass had peeled the skin back like the rind of an orange, exposing the fibrous, subtly pulsating muscle beneath. Another backward reach above his head produced a long silk scarf. He twirled it into a thick rope and tied it tightly around the wound. The fabric was instantly saturated. Was he doing this right? He wished Sarah were here. Sarah would know what to do. The things that came into your mind at a time like this. The brain was not kind. It had no sense of fairness. It taunted you with thoughts of the things you did not have or couldn't do. The noise outside had subsided as the destruction marched north. The air had an unnatural chemical smell, bitter and burnt. For the first time since he'd awakened on the street, his mind went to Alicia. The look on her face as the water crashed into her and swept her away. She was gone. Alicia was gone. From the street, a crunch of glass. Michael froze. The noise came again. Footsteps. Pushing with her heels, Amy scrambled backward.
"Tim, don't. It's me." "Don't call me that."
She had lost him. The spell was broken. In his eyes, the look of white-hot fury had returned. Suddenly, Fanning raised his head. A new emotion came into his face, one of unanticipated pleasure.
"And what have we here?"
It was Peter. The transformation was complete. His body, sleek, powerful, had joined the anonymous horde.
"There's a good fellow."
Fanning's lips pulled back into a smile, showing his fangs.
"Why don't you join us?"
Peter moved toward them through the rubble, legs bent, arms held away from his body. His steps seemed uncertain. His back and shoulders rippled with an undulating motion, like a man stretching after a long night of sleep or adjusting himself inside a new suit of clothes.
"Allow me, Amy, to make a point."
With a flick of his wrist, Fanning tossed the sword, handle first, to Peter, who snatched it robotically from the air.
"Let's see who's in there, shall we?"
Fanning strode toward him, straightened his back, and tapped the center of his chest.
"Right about here, I should think."
Peter was staring at the sword, as if puzzling over its function. What was this alien object in his hand?
"Come on now. I promise I won't move a muscle."
Peter took another step forward. His movements were jerky, as if the parts of his body could not completely coordinate. The muscles of his arms and shoulders tightened as he attempted to lift the blade.
"Getting heavier, I see."
Another step, and Peter stopped. He was within striking distance now. Fanning made no effort to defend himself. His bat-like face radiated confidence, almost amusement. The sword, at a 45-degree angle to the ground, refused to rise.
"Here, let me help you."
With the long nailed tip of his index finger, Fanning guided the blade to a horizontal position. He moved slightly forward until the point made contact with his chest, just below the sternum.
"One good thrust should do it."
A growl of effort rose from deep in Peter's throat. The seconds stretched, every part of his body drawn taut. A pop of air expelled from his lungs. He melted to his knees, the sword clanging on the pavement.
"You see, Amy, it is simply not possible. This man belongs to me now.
Like the viral in the hall, Peter had bowed his head in abject surrender. Fanning placed a hand on his shoulder. It was as if he were patting an especially obedient dog.
Do me a favor, won't you?
Fanning asked him. Peter raised his head.
Would you please kill her?
Michael pushed backward from the window on his palms, leaving a wide trail of blood on the floor. There was more than one viral out there. He could sense it. They were like wraiths, there and not there, shadowy figures gliding and shifting in the dust. Searching. Hunting. Once they found him, he wouldn't make it two steps. He scooted to the rear of the room, where there was a long counter, and behind it, a doorway half hidden by a curtain. As he slipped behind the counter, the floor began to shake again. The feeling gathered in intensity like a revving engine. Clothes racks toppled, mirrors shattered and burst outward, chunks of plaster severed from the ceiling and detonated on the floor. Curled into a ball, arms wrapped around his head, Michael thought,
God, whoever you are, I am sick of your shit. I am not your plaything. If you're going to kill me, please stop screwing around and get it over with.
The shaking subsided. From all up and down the street, Michael heard the crack of windows popping free of their frames and crashing on the pavement. The virals still lurked out there, but maybe the commotion had put them off his trail. Maybe they were cowering in some dark corner as he was. Maybe they were dead. He peeked around the counter. The place looked like a wrecking ball had hit it. Nothing left intact except for a freestanding full-length mirror, which stood anomalously on the right side of the room like a bewildered survivor surveying the wreckage of some terrible catastrophe. Angled slightly toward the front of the store, the mirror's face gave him a partial view of the street. A pod of three emerged in the murk. They seemed to be drifting aimlessly, looking around as if lost. Michael willed his body into absolute stillness. If they couldn't hear him, maybe they'd pass him by. For several seconds they continued their confused wandering, until one of them stopped abruptly. Standing in profile, the viral rotated its face from side to side, as if attempting to triangulate the source of a sound. Michael held his breath. The creature paused and angled its chin upward, holding this position for another several seconds, before swiveling toward the storefront. Its nose was twitching like a rat's. Peter stepped toward her. There was no point in trying to get away. The outcome would be the same. Time had given up its customary course. Everything seemed to happen in a manner both rushed and strangely sluggish. Her vision had narrowed, the city around her fading to a collection of shadows. She was crying, though not for herself. She couldn't have said what she was crying for. Her tears possessed an abstract quality of sadness, though something else as well. Her trials were ended. In a way, she was glad. How strange, to put down life like a heavy load she had been too long forced to carry. She hoped she would go to the farmstead. How happy she had been there. She remembered the piano, the music flowing forth, Peter's hands resting on her shoulders, the joy of his touch. How happy they had been, together. It's all right, she murmured. Her voice felt distant, not quite her own. It spilled from her lips on shallow, rapid breaths.
It's all right. It's all right.
Peter positioned the sword so that the tip was pointed at the base of her throat. The gap narrowed, then stopped, flesh mere inches from steel. His head cocked to the side. In another second, he would strike.
Well,
Fanning said. Their gazes met and held.
To know and be known. That was the final desire, the heart of love.
It was the one thing she could give him. A huge force was bursting open inside her. It was a kind of light.